There is a story in the Tibetan tradition of three monks, and these monks are Tibetan monks, and they've been on a long pilgrimage, and they're approaching the monastery. And outside the monastery, they have these dogs called Tibetan mastiffs, and they're quite vicious dogs, they're quite tough. And so as these three monks were approaching the monastery, the dogs were roused and did what they're supposed to do, and they started barking and they ran to attack the three monks because they're guard dogs. So what did the three monks do? There was a junior monk and there was two junior monks with them. And so the two junior monks saw these dogs running at them. They turned around and ran as fast as they could. But the senior monk, he was a lot wiser. And instead of running away from the mastiffs, he lifted his arms up into the air and ran straight at them, yelling. And the story goes that the dogs got terrified and surprised because these monks weren't doing what they're supposed to do. And so the dogs came skidding to a halt and then ran off back to the monastery. So this is a story, and I would seriously, if you're ever faced with vicious dogs, I would seriously recommend this strategy. It works. So long as you're one of the two people that are running off, and it's your friend. So you don't have to run faster than the dog, you just have to run faster than your friend. So the moral of the story is that when something bad is happening, you don't want to turn around and run away from it. You want to turn the attention to what is really happening. So if you're in trouble or if you're in suffering, in agitation, the idea of a meditator, certainly a Vipassana meditator, is we don't run away from suffering and the things that are troubling you. You want to go towards it. So by suffering, I mean, first of all, the obvious kind of suffering, which is like when you get sick. And the first thing you do when you get sick is you want to run away from it. Right? You want to get some pills from the doctor and get rid of it, right? As fast as possible. In the old days, people would take herbal medicines, and herbal medicines work, they just take longer. They take several months that you have to take a particular herb, and it will help you. I was just reading that turmeric, this is they often put in Indian food, and it turns everything yellow. Like my herb guru told me I had to take turmeric because my body is too wet and I need to heat it up. And so he told me to take turmeric, and within weeks, every plate, every spoon, everything I owned was yellow. Apparently, turmeric is a very good tooth whitener. Did you know that? I haven't tried it yet, but apparently, you look it up, it's on the internet, it must be true. Apparently, you rub turmeric into your teeth and it's a very good tooth whitener, but it will take 3 months. You have to do it for 3 months. Well, turn your toothbrush yellow, of course, but apparently it works. But who wants to do turmeric for 3 months when you can go to a clinic and have laser whitening that takes like half an hour, right? So, you know, we are used to, whenever there is some kind of suffering or something that we don't like, we are accustomed to looking for a short, fast, hard answer, especially in the modern world. What we're doing is we're running away from the suffering, we're running away from whatever problem it is, and wanting to fix it. Just take my problems away and fix it. Like the man who went to the doctor and he said, I'm just so greedy, I have all this trouble with greed, I've been doing meditation and I've suddenly realized just how utterly greedy I am. And the doctor said, it's okay, we have pills for that now. And the man said, give me lots of them. as a Vipassana meditator, we want to be able to turn around and run at the dog. We want to look at the suffering that we're feeling. We want to look at this feeling that just wants to get away from our problems and start to really investigate it and find out what is going on. Ostensibly, meditators are looking for freedom from suffering, and that's true, but the only way out is in. So the Buddha said, suffering is to be understood. Okay, that was his statement. Some people say he said that life is suffering. He didn't say life is suffering. I mean, there's many beautiful things in life too. Sure, it's full of suffering and tax and visas and things like this, but not that I'm bitter. But it's full of beautiful things too. Beautiful friends and family and loving kindness. And, I mean, life is not just suffering. So the actual statement that the Buddha said is, there is suffering, and this suffering is to be understood. So, when suffering arises, when agitation arises, when discomfort arises, as it does all the time for us as human beings, we want to start to investigate that. We want to turn around and start to look into it. The Buddha said, and again, this is a universal teaching. It's not Buddhism, it's not Sufi, it's not Christian, it's just common sense, it's normal. He said there are two kinds of fool in this world. The fool that shoulders a burden he does not have to shoulder. The fool who does not shoulder a burden that he should shoulder. To shoulder, if you're not a native English speaker, means to take on, to carry. So some fools will carry a burden that they do not have to carry. Other fools will not carry the kind of burden that they should carry. So the burden of suffering is something that we should carry, we should look into, we should investigate. So this is, as we did last week, we were looking at the quality of impermanence in our experiences, especially as a meditator, when something arises in the mind and we want to look at the quality of the changeability of that experience. So in Buddhism, we're not looking at the world through an idealist sense that everything is mental ideas. We're not looking at it in a materialist sense that only the material world is real. We're looking at it in an experientialist sense. And I think I made that word up, but it's the right word, I think. That is, things may or may not be real, but what we're interested in is experience as it arises and as it ceases. So, my camera here, is this just an idea in my mind that I carry around? If I don't have the idea of a camera in my mind, what I see is a square box with a round bit. I don't know what it might be used for, a paperweight or whatever. But if I have the idea of a camera, well then that's what I see, my idea, not the camera. That's an idealist sense. A materialist sense said, we don't care about your silly ideas, this is metal. This is some kind of mild steel and glass and chrome, and it's physically existing, and that's how we should relate to it. With a meditator's experience, we say we don't care about philosophy. What we care about is this experience of a camera arises in me now. I have a certain amount of attachment, it's my camera, I don't want it to break, I don't want you to steal it, I want to take a nice picture with it. That's my experience, that's my relation to the camera. When the camera's gone and it's out of sight, then it's no longer there. I have now a different experience. I'm looking at a hat on the floor, it's now my experience. So we're looking at the impermanence of experience. You know, we don't relate to the camera as always being there. We relate to it, my experience of it is changing. So this is the element of Dharma, contemplation of Dharma we're looking at last week. So this week we're adding in a new contemplation of Dharma, and that is the quality of suffering inherent in things. It's not depressive. You're not going to walk around as all miserable meditators. Meditators should be happier people. If you're doing it right. If you're not happy, don't think you're not doing it right. We have an eye to suffering, so when suffering arises, we don't run away from it, we're willing to stop and take a look at it. So when they train mindfulness for in the medical profession, for example, completely shorn of all Buddhism. If you're having a physical treatment, what they encourage you to do is go into that feeling. So one of the aspects that they've been training with us was with hip replacement operations. There are certain operations where you should stop and lie and rest. Certain illnesses, I should say, where you should rest, stay in bed. And there are certain things where you should work it. When I was very young, and if somebody had their appendix out, they were stayed in bed for weeks and weeks and weeks. Nowadays, when you have your appendix out, they have you walking around that same evening after the operation. Because the success of recovery is much faster if you are willing to work it. Well, in the same way that if they teach mindfulness with these things, they're teaching mindfulness with hip replacements. And the idea is to go into the pain and start to accept it. Because when there's pain, our immediate intention or reaction is, stop it, I want to get away from it, give me pills, give me tablets, give me television, anything, just don't let me feel that pain in my head. And that withdrawal from it is creating fear around it and is perpetuating the pain. The research shows that if you are willing to go into it and feel it and be with it and see what happens to it, you start to lose your fear of it and your recovery is a lot, lot faster. They did this with psoriasis that begins with a P, which is amazing. Psoriasis of the skin. And if you practice mindfulness while you have ultraviolet, high-intensity ultraviolet treatment onto the skin, if they pair this with mindfulness meditation, the healing happens four times faster. Now, the research, there's always like limitations to the research. In this case, they were only looking at a two-week period. So what happens later? Does the skin never... Over, you know, 6 months later, what happened? Did the mindfulness help or not help? You know, there is, if you're just looking at the research, there are some limitations. By the way, I will post up, this course was based upon Dr. Wing's course, and he's a cancer surgeon and uses this mindfulness as part of the recovery from cancer with patients around the world. And he's been doing this for a number of years, but actually, he's retiring this year, so he is going to actually put this into a proper funded clinical, large-scale clinical study. The same is true of mental illnesses and sicknesses. So many hospitals now, when you have a mental sickness or illness, together with medicine in many cases, they're training the patients to use mindfulness techniques. A large one is called panic, when panic arises, which it does in many different forms. Instead of running away from the panic, you stop and you turn your attention onto it, and you're willing to look at this feeling of panic, this feeling of not liking, this feeling of sometimes nausea. And what happens, the more that you are willing to look at it, put yourself in a safe place first. Freud said there's three kinds of fear. Real fear, like big dog. Moral fear, which you should develop, is a good thing. And neurotic fear, which is fear when you don't need it. Okay? So, a good example is spiders. If you, like I'm petrified of spiders, I don't mind admitting. In fact, somebody sent me a picture of a spider the other day, Lee, if you know him. And I wrote back and said, Lee, I don't even like pictures of spiders. But if you bring a spider and you say to me that it's harmless and it's crawling on you, I can use my wisdom, I can use my intelligence to override my fear, right? And what you do is, the behaviorist psychologists, they will, you know, bring you a spider in a glass box. So you know you're in a safe space, but you go up to the spider and you're willing to start feeling those feelings of fear. Then they take the lid off the glass box and you'll panic a bit. And then after a while, you sit there, I'm still alive, I'm still here. And then after a while, they will put the spider on their hand, and then after a while, and eventually you've got spiders running all over you, and you're not bothered. So they say. So when physical feelings arise, fine, but also for the mental feelings, when the mental suffering starts to arise, turn the attention around and start to look at that suffering. And most of the things in your life that you're afraid of, you really don't need to be afraid of. Really, it's a reaction against something. It's some kind of fear reaction, some kind of neurotic reaction. And a lot of the time, you don't need to be that afraid of it. And I've seen people who've lost their legs and things in an accident. And of course, they're fearful. But, you know, after a couple of years, the studies on happiness, which is probably the most researched thing in psychology, studies show that even if something terrible happens to you, you lose your sight, you lose your legs, your happiness level will dip for a while, but will return to where it was. Happiness does not depend upon the things that you really think it depends on. So as you were willing to look at suffering, you start to realize, put yourself in a safe space first, right? Don't be willing to look at suffering when there's a dog, you know, about to bite you. Like, oh, this is just suffering in my leg. You know, this is just suffering of blood pouring out of my leg. You know, you have to be in a safe space and do it sensibly. And you have to accept that sometimes it will overwhelm you, and sometimes you need to avoid suffering. You need to get away. This is what defense mechanisms are. Again, a bit of Freudian psychology, but a defense mechanism is there to avoid suffering until you're ready to look at it and approach it and accept it. Neurosis is when you're employing defense mechanisms that may have been applicable when you were 10 years old, but you keep hold of them, you keep using them. So, for example, denial. You know, when you're a kid and your father leaves or something like that, and it's too much to handle, you might believe that he's coming back, or you know, you might employ certain kinds of defense mechanisms. But when you're older, if you're just denying everything, then you're a neurotic mess. So there are times when you do need to avoid suffering, you know, be wise with it. There's one story of a man, and this is this particular defense mechanism is called isolation. And he had a farming accident and he lost his arm. His arm was literally cut off in a farming machine. And this man, unbelievably, having lost his arm, using his good arm, he went and turned off the machine. He went into the machine and he fished out his arm and he walked round to his neighbor's place. And then he rang the doorbell. And the neighbor answered, started screaming, of course. And he waited a minute and said, "Do you think you could call me an ambulance?" So what's happening there is, in psychology, it's called isolation. You know that something's happened. This is a true story. It's on the internet. You know that something's happened. You know that there's something that you have to do. You know that panicking and flapping and screaming is not going to enable you to get through the situation. So mentally, you just isolate yourself from the situation and you get on and you do what needs to be done. But if in a year's time that man is still completely blank regarding his arm, then he's carried it too far. Sooner or later, he's going to have to go into suffering, like, "I lost my arm." By the way, they sewed the arm back on again and even has functions in his hand. So, as suffering arises, mental suffering too, be willing to turn into and go and have a look at that suffering. So a good one is if you have a partner, a husband or a wife, and that husband is annoying the heck out of you because he leaves cupboard doors open. I saw this one time. This woman was ranting at a man, like, he just leaves the doors open everywhere he goes. And the psychologist was like, okay, leaving the door open is not real suffering. So it's not an issue of leaving the doors open. It's an issue of your pain and your suffering and your non-acceptance. So forget about the issue that's causing you suffering. Let's look at the actual feeling of non-acceptance, of disliking, of fighting against, of avoiding things, not being willing to look at them, not being willing to be with them. That's what's really important. Now, that's a long-term strategy. You know, it's easier to divorce your husband, of course. Remove the proximate cause of your suffering, right? It's easier to take a pill, you know, and get rid of your pain. You know, whatever it is that's causing you problems, it's always easier to just get rid of the problem. But as a meditator, you want to turn the attention around, run at the dog, run at the scary dog, and promise you the dog won't bite. Okay? And have a look at what is this feeling of suffering? What is this feeling of non-acceptance, of not liking, of judging, of being critical of people around us, of situations around us? There are many, many things that actually you can bear if you're willing to accept the suffering. So vipassana, the way that vipassana meditation is taught is don't push and don't pull. Don't accept it, don't reject it. Be willing to be with something and look at it and feel it. Then you'll start to lose many of these fears, many of these neurotic fears that push you around a lot of the time. Are you somebody who can take criticism? Somebody calls you camel face. This is Ajahn Brown's example. Someone calls you a camel face. Ajahn Chah used to have this one that the thing in the Northeast was you'd be called a dog. And then somebody called you a dog, you'd get really angry about it. And Ajahn Chah said, well, you just take your hand and feel your bum. If you have a tail there, then you're probably a dog. If you don't have a tail there, you're not a dog. Right? So being willing to look at the thing, well, somebody calls your name, actually it's not that bad. Somebody criticizes you, it's all right. Yeah, it actually doesn't hurt that much if you're willing to feel that reaction. You know, that like, you can talk, you've got a camel face as well, or whatever it is. You want to react, you want to fight against it, you want to get rid of that person. Then take a little bit more subtle, views and opinions. The Buddha said, views and opinions are the bar upon which hangs mankind. Interesting. So much trouble and strife is caused from views and opinions. Someone has the opposite view from you. You desperately want to change their view, right? I often have this thing, you know, people tell me like about a good movie they've seen or something. Oh, I saw this movie, it was really good. I don't like movies. And then they're like, but no, but it was really good. It was really good. And start telling me about it. And then a few days later, they'll send me a DVD of it. I'm like, I.